that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that, that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast. With host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk. Welcome to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday and totally free wherever you get your podcast. Interviews with some of the biggest names in rock and metal. As I tell you guys every week, the interviews you hear on the podcast originated on my Sirius XM radio show, Trunk Nation, which is heard live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern, noon to 2 Pacific, on channel 103 Faction Talk, or anytime live or on demand on the Sirius XM app. If you're in the US or Canada and you're only listening to this podcast, you're only getting a tiny fraction of what I do each and every day on the radio. So please come on board and join me for Trunk Nation every day, talking rock music with you live on Faction Talk 103, starting at 3 o'clock Eastern time. And hey, you might be saying, well, you know what, Eddie, I don't have Sirius XM and I don't really think I'm going to get it. Well, we're going to help you out. Go to SiriusXM.com/EddieTrunk. 3 months free. So you can sample it. No credit card required. Drop it anytime. Nothing to lose. Give it a shot. Come on board and listen to the radio show every day. And remember, if you can't listen in the 3 to 5 Eastern window live, and you're like, hey, that's in the middle of my workday, I got to work, I can't listen to the radio, no worries. Because the shows are archived on the app right after we do them. Many just get in the car, hit the app, listen on their way home or their way in the next day, whatever the case may be. So we got everything covered for you. Hope you come on board and join me. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter or X, Instagram, Facebook page. Big thanks to everybody I hung out with on the Monsters of Rock cruise. If you do listen to the radio show, we brought you a ton of huge interviews from the cruise. Those are all now on the Sirius XM app. We'll bring some of them to you here on the podcast in the coming weeks. But if you have Sirius XM, no need to wait. Just go to the app and punch in Trunk Nation. You'll see the shows and the interviews come up. We had Steve Harris from Iron Maiden, Ace Frehley, Joe Satriani, KK Downing, Nuno Bettencourt, a who's who of rock music, except Faster Pussycat, all these guys dropping by. It's all on the app. We'll bring you some of it here on the podcast again in the coming weeks. EddieTrunk.com is my website. Next appearance will be in Wichita, Kansas on March 29th, hosting Tom Kiefer and LA Guns, and then in Oklahoma City at the Diamond Ballroom March 30th, hosting that same double bill. So hope to see you if you're in those areas of the country. Keep an eye on my socials for info and updates. This week on the podcast, we have two back-to-back interviews. We'll start with old friend Frank Hannon of Tesla, released a new solo single, and we get into all sorts of other stuff, talking about Tesla, of course, and some other things as well. So we'll get you Frank first, and we'll follow it with guitarist Orianthe, who is a very, very talented woman who plays guitar and sings, and I've known her for quite a while, played with Michael Jackson, Alice Cooper, and others. She also jammed at my 40th anniversary and radio party with her old boss, Alice Cooper. Ori will join us for the second interview, talking about a new single she released and a new band she has coming. That'll be second. We'll lead with Frank Hannon. Here he is on the Eddie Trunk podcast. How are you, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, man? That got my heart pumping. That's the first time I've heard it on the air, bro. Thanks for debuting it.
Yeah, man. Well, it's cool. I texted you right after you put it out, and then there's a video out for it, too. People can see it on YouTube. That song originally written and done by an artist named Gary Wright, the same guy that did Dreamweaver back in 1975. What made you decide, besides it's a great song, what made you decide to want to do a cover of it?
Well, honestly, it was the singing. You know, I'm a frustrated, crazy closet singer, to be honest. I love singing lead vocals, even though I don't have the confidence really, and I don't feel good about my singing voice half the time. But I was singing it one time a few years ago, and a good friend of mine said, man, you should sing that song because it suits your voice. And so I started singing it, and my bros in the video, Kelly Smith, Nick Nichols, Billy Rainey, the guys that played on the track, really encouraged me to record it and sing it, and we did. And then it was live in my garage, you know, when we did it. But then when Gary Wright passed away last year, we decided, you know what, we should put that out and pay tribute to him because he was a great artist, great songwriter, and we decided to put it out.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the fact that the vocal was something that really appealed to you about the song, because I was going to mention that, man. I mean, I've always liked your voice, and I've always thought your voice was strong, and you've done, for people that don't know and only know you from Tesla, which, of course, you're not the lead singer in Tesla, but you do sing a lot in the band, backing vocals and all that. But, you know, you've got a pretty big catalog now of stuff you've done outside of Tesla. And listening to this song, I think this is one of your best vocals yet. I mean, you really killed it on the vocal here.
Gosh, thanks. That means a lot coming from you, Eddie. I appreciate it. Because, again, I'm learning, constantly learning. And singing is something that I'm still working on. You know, I've been able, there's some songs. Like, I can sing Working Man by Rush, Geddy Lee. I can sing that. I can sing some Led Zeppelin, you know, live in concert. But recording my vocals has always been a challenge. And like you said, I've got a catalog of solo music. I've got a lot of singles. And I think I'm going to put them on a vinyl called the Greatest Unknown Hits. I got a lot of them, man. I got a lot of them. I'm a songwriter, and I do covers, obviously, like this is a cover tune, but a lot of original songs as well that are in my own solo catalog.
You know, I think that would be a great idea because you do, I mean, you know, being honest, I mean, some of the stuff you've done as a solo artist has flown under the radar, some of it a little better known. There's been a lot of different genres you've gone into, heavy metal hippie stuff, you know, you've done solo stuff, you've done stuff with other bands, you know, you've done a lot more so than anybody else in the band in terms of output outside of Tesla. And I think that, you know, if you put out like a streamlined package of like 12 songs, CD, vinyl or whatever, and like the best of, you know, the best of Frank Hannon or whatever, I think that would be cool because I guarantee you there's a lot of people that maybe would know some of it, but not all of it. And if you kind of sequenced it in like a concise package, I think that would be a great way to present almost like a, like you said, a best of that weren't necessarily hits, but for you personally of stuff you've done outside the band.
Well, yeah. And it's definitely all over the place. I experiment a lot and I have some psychedelic acid jazz sounding stuff, some real heavy metal music, like my song Ride Strong is metal all the way with double bass, you know, and crazy stuff like that. And then I've got some more bluegrass country hippie twang music. So it's, you know, it's all over, man. I experiment. I like to have fun. And I appreciate the kudos, man. I at some point, I am definitely going to put it all together.
Now, what are you playing on this version of Love is Alive? You're obviously playing guitar, but in the video, you're playing, like, is it a keyboard, basically? Like, what are you rocking there?
Yes, it's called a Moog synthesizer. And this particular Moog is called a Mini Moog. And, you know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, I had mentioned Rush, Geddy Lee played a Mini Moog on Tom Sawyer. It's really famous for its fat analog bass sounds. And that's what I'm using to play and emphasize the bass lines. Now, the reason is also is Gary Wright, the original writer of the song. The whole Dreamweaver album is all done with Moog synthesizers, which was very groundbreaking at that time, which coincidentally, 1975, Eddie, I think, man, that's probably one of my favorite years in rock and roll music is the early mid to mid 70s. Prior to 76 in the disco and the new wave era, when rock and roll was still rock and roll, man. You know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, I've always said for me personally, because I a lot of debate with my audience and they'll say, you know, what's your favorite decade, 70s or 80s? I lean towards the 70s because to me, that's the stuff, and we're around the same age. That's the stuff I really grew up with as a little kid discovering rock music. When the 80s rolled around, I love so many acts from the 80s, including your own band, of course. But I look at those like I started in the business in 83. So I feel like I kind of came up with all of those bands. They're all many of them are friends. We all kind of came up in our respective worlds together. But the 70s guys, they were the ones that I had the posters on my wall. That's when I was really discovering rock music. And to me, that's the stuff I find that I default to more than anything when I want to listen to music.
I think they were still kind of inventing stuff in the 70s and still breaking ground, especially the mid 70s, you know, especially with guitar and, you know, pushing boundaries with the Mini Moog synthesizers like Gary Wright did. By the time it got to the 80s, it was already kind of invented. And now it was like a next generation, but the mid 70s, guitar was still being invented. I mean, just like when Eddie Van Halen came out, it was already late 70s, but it was a new thing that you had never heard before, you know? So that's, I think, why we love it so much, man.
And the other big change from a recording standpoint, of course, was the 80s was really when digital technology came in, for better or worse. I mean, that's when you could start doing stuff digitally and digital effects and reverbs and, you know, automated mixing consoles and all that stuff. So technology definitely changed and you got a little bit, you started getting away from that analog tape, you know, live off the floor recording.
Yeah, and I think that's why Tesla's first album is probably one of my favorite albums that we did, and maybe yours too, is it was still early enough before digital technology. It was only done on one machine. It wasn't a 48 track. It was 24. It was all manually mixed, you know, which is why we put the No Machines moniker on the album. So it was still early enough in the 80s where it was before technology took over. And that's why I love Tesla's first album is my favorite.
Yeah, I heard Brian, I think it's Brian that said he always wishes that you would love to do a remix of the record because he felt like there was way too much reverb on it or something.
I think that's probably when Brian and I will ultimately get into the UFC fighting match.
You disagree.
I disagree. Brian and I are brothers and we love each other, but I think that album is sacred. And I think ultimately he would agree that going back and remixing it, but he does have a different taste and he's very, you know, talented at production himself and, you know, producing and mixing. So I understand, you know, it's all subjective. Everyone's got a different flavor and they like different sounds, you know, but that first album to me is really, it's just, we captured lightning in a bottle on that live, very primitive recording. And, you know, I think it should be left alone myself personally.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you should ever take it out of print, but I don't care if people want to mess with their catalog a little, as long as the original version always stays available. You know, speaking of the old days and us growing up into rock music, I never knew this in all the decades I've known you and we've been friends, but what was your first concert? What was the first concert you ever saw?
Well, The very first concert I remember seeing was Johnny Cash and the Statler Brothers at Memorial Auditorium. And then I saw, shortly after that, I saw Robin Trower at the Memorial Auditorium on his Bridge of Sighs tour.
Oh, wow. So Robin Trower was like the first rock guitar player you saw.
Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, but in my head, man, I tell you what, I saw Peter Frampton a lot when I was listening to the headphones, and my imagination of Frampton comes alive. And the reason I'm bringing him up is I know he was recently on your show. And
last week,
in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's about time. I want to send kudos out to Peter Frampton. He deserves that. And, you know, I'm just really excited.
Well, he's not in yet. He's nominated for the first time, but he's not in yet.
Well, he better get in. We better start voting because
I'll be voting. I'm Frank. I'm right with you, man. I got my ballot sitting right here, and I will be absolutely voting for Frampton and Foreigner. I lost my mind on the air about a month ago or so when they had the most recent Hall of Fame induction, and they ended up, they asked Frampton to come and play to induct Sheryl Crow when he's not inducted himself. And I'm like, how the fuck? Like, nothing against Sheryl Crow, but how do you ask Frampton to stand on stage with her and back her up when he's not in himself, when she's going in before him? I blew a gasket on the air. So it's got to be made right. Them and Foreigner. Yes, it's absurd. Yeah.
Rightfully so. In fact, my blood pressure is rising right now. I can feel it. I'm about ready to blow. I'm getting ready to blow a gasket. But, you know, because... yeah, Frampton, you know, humble pie in the late 60s, early 70s, and then, you know, having the balls to leave humble pie and have a solo career for four albums, Wind of Change, Frampton's Camel, and then in 1975 to record such a brilliant live album that changed. It was the biggest selling album of all time, you know. It's like until Michael Jackson Thriller came out. And it's just a phenomenal album. And so I would say, you know, in my heart, that would be my first concert, because I listened to that album, I would say, 5 million times.
But did you actually see Frampton as a kid that early back in those days, or you just listened to the record a lot? Or did you actually go see him play back then?
Well, I did go see Peter Frampton play when he was at his lowest point. And I've got another story about that, I'll tell you. After I'm In You and Sgt. Pepper's and all that stuff came out, and Frampton's career basically crashed, you know, and everybody, his fans just kind of abandoned him in the early 80s, right? I went to see Peter Frampton open for David Bowie, and he was making his comeback. You know, man, rock and roll business is tough, man. It's up and down. It's like a roller coaster. And he's had some extreme highs and extreme lows in his career.
Yeah.
And we have too. Tesla was broke up in the 90s, and Tesla had some extreme lows, man. It was hard times. And, you know, we got back together. We've been working hard, solid for the past 24 years. And it's been great, but it's a roller coaster ride, man. Rock and roll is tough. And it's a very tough business, and people are not fair in it, and you got to survive it. And Frampton's a survivor, man. I have nothing but respect and love for the guy. And, you know, there was a case where I wanted to collaborate with him, and I was advised by the powers that be to not work with him, because at that point he wasn't popular anymore. And, you know, that's just fucking bullshit.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but, you know, that's how the business is. We all know that. You know, speaking of the old days, I'm looking at I just pulled up the Tesla website while I'm talking to you, which, again, is teslatheband.com. And there's a thing, you've got a tab on here which shows all your tours, and it starts with a photo of you in 1982 in a pre-Tesla band called Earthshaker. And then it goes to City Kid, 83 to 86. And the photo that I'm looking at of City Kid, I can see that it's Troy, Brian, you, and Tommy. But is that Jeff? Was Jeff in that picture? That's a super young Jeff right there?
Well, I'm not looking at the picture, but if Troy was in it, then yes, that's definitely Jeff. Is he front and center?
Yeah, yeah. He's got his arms crossed, and he's right. And it looks like Tommy's rocking a mullet.
Is he wearing parachute pants?
Looks like it. Yeah, and like a striped shirt. I guess it does look like him. Yeah, it does look like him. Yeah. Man, you guys are such kids. And like I said, Tommy looks like Tommy's got a mullet, and Troy's got some sort of, like, I don't know, two-tone shirt on. That is an awesome photo. I never saw that before.
That's funny, man. And going backwards to that Earthshaker picture, man, that is hilarious. I mean, am I wearing like some black spandex?
No, it looks like it's a live shot. It's only a picture of you, and it's like you, like, you know, like hitting a power cord or something. It's just like a close-up of your face on stage.
Oh, I'll have to look at that. That might have been from our high school Battle of the Bands, that show that I promoted. It was called The Rock Fight, and I think that's what that picture's from. That's hilarious, man. Yeah, Brian Wheat and myself, we started the band back in 1982. When we were kids, and we're still together now, and we're kicking ass. You know, hey, are we going to see you in Las Vegas? We're doing the Las Vegas residency again in April.
I know, and I'm going to try everything to get there for at least a show, maybe the last show you do. I was looking at the dates because I'm about to go into cruise land, man, and I'm sorry I'm going to miss you because we always have a great time on the Monsters Cruise. I know you're not on this year, but that's leaving on Saturday. And then after that, I'm doing the On the Blue, which you've done before as well. And then after that, in April, I'm doing, I'm hosting the two Creed cruises. The band Creed are doing cruises. So I've got four cruises in the next 2 months, and they're all out of Florida. So obviously, being in New Jersey, it's easier getting in and out of Florida. But I'm going to try, because I looked at the routing. I really want to catch you guys at least one of the shows at House of Blues. So hopefully, I'm going to be able to get out there for maybe the last one.
Well, I understand, man, because, you know, you were very forgiving. I missed your 40th anniversary party in Vegas, which, by the way, I've seen the clips, man. You guys had a great time on that, man. Tell me about that, man. Was that awesome or what?
Yeah, we missed you, man. I would have loved to have had you there. You know that, but I know you were dealing with some stuff. And but, man, I'm telling you, it was, Frank, the word I keep going back to is surreal. I mean, to have Geezer Butler up there and Alice Cooper and Kevin Cronin and Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony and the 80s guys that are my buddies, like Piercy and Bach, and Pat Travers showed up and played Snortin' Whiskey, and it's just Brad Gillis showed up and jammed at the end. I mean, it was just crazy what went on that night. And the thing that's so special to me that I tell people is, first of all, we gave all the money that we made to the Dio Cancer Fund, but nobody was paid. Like, it wasn't like I booked people and paid people and offered them money. Everyone that showed up was there because they wanted to be there and just be a part of it. And that means so much to me. And Brian, you know, Brian represented your band. He was there, but Brian was like, I was like, hey, do you want to get up and play with somebody? And Brian was like, no, man. He goes, I just want to hang out and watch this thing, man. And he was in the wings of the stage, taking it in the whole night. It was 3.5 hours, and it felt like it was 10 minutes. It was like, again, it's not just me saying it. People have been calling into the show ever since, saying it was like not only the concert of the year, but one of the best concerts they ever saw. It just was an amazing night.
Yeah, I've seen the footage, man, and I kicked myself for not making it. But, yeah, Geezer, what a lineup, man. And our good friend Brent Woods was emceeing, like, putting the music together for you.
Brent went above and beyond him. He was the music director, and he played almost the whole night, anchored the whole thing. Mike Portnoy helped out a lot as well. And, you know, Jay Buchanan from Rival Sons came out and sang with Geezer, and Corey Taylor from Slipknot came out and sang with Geezer, and it just went and went and went. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I know there's a ton of stuff that people that were there shot on YouTube, but it doesn't do it justice. And I have the entire thing pro-recorded and pro-shot multi-camera. I just am struggling with what I can do with it, because obviously you need to have all kinds of clearances, publishing, you know, all of that. And I don't have that. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it. The only option would be to just put the whole thing on YouTube and let YouTube deal with it. But it really deserves more than that. But if it ends up being that, I just need people to see it, because we have what's on YouTube. We have the real deal. It would smoke what's on YouTube. We have it all pro shot and recorded multi-track.
Wow. Well, my friendly advice would be is just go ahead and get some young guy that's hungry to want to edit it and go ahead and filter it and consolidate it and put it together. And then, like the old saying, build it and it will happen, you know, build it and it will
come. Yeah, the editing and the mixing part's not the problem. I know tons of people that could do that. The problem is all the, you know, you need, as you know, being a musician, you need to clear the publishing. You need to clear who, some of these guys don't own the songs, and you've got to clear the performances and the performance footage. So there's a lot there. It's going to take some time, but we're going to continue to work on it and we'll see. But, you know, I'm sorry that you missed it, but we should tell people that Tesla is, I mean, you guys are out there hitting it. You got the next, the shows resume March 1st, which is just in a couple days. You pick it up in Kentucky. All the dates are on TeslaTheBand.com. And then the Vegas shows at House of Blues, April 5, 6, 10, 12, and 13. Great venue. That's where I did the party Frank and I are just talking about. And it's a great spot, great sound, great stage. And,
another show I want to let people know they should come if they're into flying out and seeing the band. Is come to the Ryman in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to be there. March 12th at the Ryman. Yeah, in Nashville, Tennessee. That's a great iconic
historic
gig, that we're doing.
Historic. Have you ever played there before?
Yes, we have played there years ago, and I just recently did a show there with the Almond Betts Family Revival. And that was really cool, you know, playing with those guys. And, you know, so the Ryman is classic. And Tesla's working on a new song. We've got this ballad that we've been working on that Jeff sounds phenomenal on. So we're gonna dive into the studio and try to put that together for a summer release. And what else can I tell you? Monsters on the Mountain.
Frank, hold up. You think you're going to do a whole new album at some point? Are you going to put all this together as an album
for Tesla? At that point, you know, we're going to have enough singles. We did Time to Rock. We did Cold Blue Steel. You know, we're going to have this new one, which is called All About Love. You know, eventually, well, there might be a whole album, but I can't say for sure right now. But we're doing one song at a time, and it'll be out this summer. And, Monsters on the Mountain is another show we're going to do, a big one.
In August.
You know, yeah. So, you
I'll
know,
be there.
Tesla fans are awesome. We get a lot of them that fly out and come see us. And, you know, we've been working hard on, you know, tapping into changing our set list, courtesy of you kicking our ass saying, hey, pull this one out, pull that one out, you know. So we do the best we can with that. And, it's all good, man. Everything's good.
Hey, real couple quick things, and I'll let you go. Speaking of Tesla, there's always been talk about a possible Tesla box set. Any movement on that front?
That there is something that is held up with all those legalities that you just talked about with your concert there and all the different legalities. There's some legal issues that are holding it up. And so I can't say whether or not or when that would ever happen or what it would actually include, you know. And the truth is, in my opinion, we throw it all out there anyway, you know. So I can't tell you. But I will tell you that we are releasing Reel to Reel on vinyl for Record Store Day coming up here real soon. It's going to be a full-on remastered version of our Reel to Reel album.
And speaking of like the old school stuff, for people don't know that record, that was a bunch of 70s covers that you guys did that I have like the 3 CD version of it. There's great stuff on there, including, I think didn't you do Rock Bottom by UFO on there?
Yes, we did. And it was all live. The band set up live in the studio on the Reel to Reel tape. That's why we named it Reel to Reel. And we did Rock Bottom with the extended guitar solo on there. We did a cover of Led Zeppelin's Thank You. We actually did a Peter Frampton song, Do You Feel Like We Do? We did a lot of old classics.
That was a great version of Thank You. I remember that version of that song. You guys did a great version on that. Jeff sounds amazing on that. And the last thing is, and a few people, when they knew you were coming on, asked me to ask you about this, because for those that don't know, your father-in-law is the legendary Dickie Betts from the Allman Brothers, and we all know he's been battling a lot of health concerns lately. Can you give us any update on how he's doing?
Well, I have to tell you, man, he is one of the toughest guys that I've ever known, man. He has battled so many things in the recent 5 years, you know, falling down, breaking his hip, and he is just so strong. And together, he smiles, cracks jokes. We sit around and talk and watch football games together. And he's inspiring to me, man. He is one of the toughest guys that I've ever met. And he's a fighter, you know, and he's fighting all of these physical obstacles that keep coming up at 80 years old, and the life that he's led as a rock and roll legend, you know. But his spirit and his personality and his vibe is still the same, and he's a lot of fun, man. And I'm just so grateful that we have these days and time together.
Can he play still, Frank, at all? Is he able to play guitar still or no?
He picks it up in the living room. And in fact, we just got him a Gretsch Electromatic Chet Atkins style hollow body guitar. And he loves that thing, man. He's been picking it up. And he was actually playing ukulele the other night, which I think is what he started on when he was a kid. He was giving a ukulele lesson to one of our neighbors here. So, yeah, he still picks it up and plucks around.
So you've jammed with him, right?
Yeah. When I first met my wife 24 years ago, we went to Las Vegas and we jammed in a hotel room for hours. And that's what really kicked me in the ass to sing, because, you know, Dickie Betts was in the Allman Brothers as the lead guitarist, but he also sang their biggest hit, you know, Ramblin' Man and Southbound and a lot of their, you know, revival. So he's a singer as well, and he's the one that encouraged me to do the same. And I jammed with him in Las Vegas. I've jammed with him in San Francisco at Slim's. I sat in with his band multiple times, and we've had a lot of late night jams and watched the sun come up.
Those are awesome, man. Those are awesome memories. That's really, really cool to hear. Well, we wish him nothing but the best, and it's good to hear that he's still, you know, able to play a little bit as well. All right, buddy, listen, thank you for the time. It's always good to talk to you. I miss you. I hope to see you soon, maybe in Vegas in April. I'll try to make one of those shows. And everybody check out Frank's great cover of the Gary Wright tune, Love Is Alive, which is out now. And go to YouTube and just pull up Frank Hannon, Love Is Alive. You'll see the video. The video is really cool as well. And you did a great version on this. So good stuff here. And say hello to the rest of the guys. Hope to see you soon, man.
Thanks, Eddie. Man, I love you, bud. And thanks for having me on your show.
Anytime, brother. I'll talk to you soon. We'll give everybody a little bit more of Frank's new single going into the break. I'll talk to you soon, Frank. See you, bro.
Right on.
Always great to visit with brother Frank. Tesla out there playing some shows. Their Vegas dates are coming up again soon as well. Hope to catch some of them.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go. Give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
the charcoal mask! Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox.
Use Clorox products as directed.
Promise you a second interview in this week's podcast. It is with Orianthi. Let's get it to you right now. Ori, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Eddie?
Good, good, good. I was just telling the audience before you came on that it's been a bit since I had you on the radio show. And if I remember, the last time it was when you were working with Richie Sambora. It was probably 5-6 years ago, and we were at NAMM. And then after the interview, we sat in that car and you guys cranked the music. I remember you were in the back seat and he was cranking the music for me in the parking lot.
That was loud. I remember
that. It was loud.
Yeah, I think I lost a bit of hearing. I think you did too. I think we all did, actually. We cranked it so loud. Because we worked on a record with Bob Rock back then for like, I guess, 3 or 4 years. We're making that record. And that was a fun time. It was back then. And, you know, music's such an adventure and getting to collaborate with all these different artists and everything, you know, it's just, it's really colorful and cool, you know?
You know, I was curious, that music, and I don't know if you remember what exactly I heard that day, but that, some of that is not what came out on that EP you guys ended up releasing, right? That was different than what actually got released, was it not?
Yeah, we recorded a lot of songs. I think like 20 or maybe 30 songs or something like that. And, you know, had to narrow it down, obviously, for a record. It finally came out and, you know, it just got put out there. We didn't really do anything, you know, with the record. And but, you know, it was great music we made together. And it was, a lot of incredible musicians that played on the record, too. And working with Bob and, you know, writing with Richie and everything. And it was a real experience, you know, and that's what, you know, life's about. And you learn from things. And as I said, it's an adventure. So, yeah, hopefully those songs one day, never mind, you know, get put out there. They're a great track for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with it, because it was really killer stuff. And I guess it's just kind of sitting there in limbo. But I would love for that to come out, because it was really rocking from what I remembered. And it was really cool. Whether you use them in other places or whether those actual recordings come out, would you like to see something happen with that stuff? Is there a lot of stuff you recorded that you'd like to see maybe come out, or you think it's better left not released?
You know what? As an artist, you always look to the future and kind of like, what are we doing today and everything like that. But, you know, sometimes you have a time to reflect, and I'm proud of those songs. You know, it's like, you know, you put a lot of time into them and all of that kind of stuff. And Richie and I are friends, and, you know, he's on his path and I'm on mine, and it's all good. And maybe one day in the future that we put out for a movie soundtrack, or you never know, right? When you write songs, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It was good stuff. It really was. It just was. I was like, when I heard the EP or what officially came out, I was like, and I like that too, but that was just a little different. I was like, I don't think this is the stuff I heard that day. So I always told the audience about that. It was a fun day though. I remember you sitting coiled up in the back seat and him just like, no, listen, make it louder. We had a fun time.
Yeah. You know, and also NAMM is like quite wild too. Like,
yes.
You know, just the whole zoo of that environment, you know? Hey, you look back on all the different experiences, and it's been a wild ride. It really has, and continues on, you know.
Yeah. And when I look at your career overall, it's interesting because you've done, I mean, people may know you for your time playing in Alice, or maybe your time playing with Michael Jackson, certainly, but your career and your music path really since you were a kid has been very varied. I mean, you've worked in the pop world, you've worked in the rock world, the hard rock world, now the blues world, which we'll get into that in a second. But when you set out on your path as a musician, was that always the goal, to do varied things? Did you always want to kind of experiment and work in different genres a little bit?
Absolutely. You know, with my father's musical collection, my mom's, so different. You know, so I grew up with my mom, which is like, you know, pop music and country and all that. And then you had Frank Sinatra and Richard Marx to Michael Bolton. And then my dad will listen to Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Santana. So for me, you know, I had like just a very sort of colorful sort of palette of music that I listened to, and I loved it all. So as a songwriter, I started writing songs when I was like 6 years old, and, you know, getting the opportunity when I moved over here to the US, and I was like 18, 19, I got signed to Jimmy Iovine. I self-produced my first record at home. I learned how to record, you know, learned how to play every instrument. Kind of, you know, Prince was a big, you know, influence on me too, and kind of doing that. And I sent my demo out to everybody, and finally got a record deal, came over here. And honestly, you know, my heart and mind's open, and getting to work with people I have has been a true honor. My solo career, you know, I've made about 9 records, you know, solo wise. And so, you know, and having a big pop hit too, which came out quite some time ago. And, you know, I love pop songs. I love rock songs. I love the blues. The blues resonates with me the most, because that's what I sort of, when I first picked up the guitar, you know, listening to Jimi Hendrix or Santana or Eric Clapton or B.B. King, that for some reason, it just really resonated with me. And I really, you know, sort of took to that. And I feel like I always go back to that when I pick up my guitar, so I'm playing like blues, you know, licks. So I figured with this new release and moving forward in my, you know, career and past, making that kind of music, making something that's really, you know, true to me, just getting in the studio, self-producing it too, bringing in my musicians and different people. And I'm going back, actually cutting the second single on Friday with Michael Biehn, who works with Lady Gaga and a bunch of people. And he's incredible, you know, with some gospel singers, and it's very bluesy and spacey. And I'm excited about that too. But First Time Blues, had a blast recording that at Robbie Krieger's, and I feel very comfortable in that studio for sure.
Before we get to your current track and talk about this track that you did, which I absolutely love, and we'll get into that in a second. You talk about moving to the U.S. from Australia when you were 18. How old were you when you first started playing guitar? What was the moment that made you want to pick up the guitar? And did you take lessons, or were you self-taught? Like, what was your journey to finding the guitar as a primary instrument?
Well, I started on piano, and then my dad, he's a guitar player, so guitars around the house, he collects them like crazy, and it just looks so cool, just very magical to me as a kid. And in order to sort of hang out with my dad, you know, we're listening to vinyl records and sitting there, and he put a guitar in my hands, and I started playing left-handed first, actually, because, you know, like Jimmy and my dad's left-handed, and then he's like, no, you should probably learn right-handed because you have more choice in guitars. So, you know, then after that, I just sort of caught that bug of just playing, like just learning as much as I can. And no one had to tell me to practice, you know, it was something that I just gravitated towards. It wasn't easy, but something, when you have excitement over something, like whether it be painting or whatever you want to do in life, no one's got to tell you to go and, you know, do it. You just want to. So there was this pull for me, and I, you know, writing lyrics first and just strumming and, you know, like the Beatles or, you know, Elvis or any of those songwriters, I kind of really started just writing, you know, lyrics and strumming at first, and then studied classical when I was 10, went to a university. And then after that, I, you know, moved on to electric when I was 11. And then I really, you know, it kind of, for me, like after seeing Santana perform, I was just like, wow, like that's amazing. The way that he made the guitar sing, he played a beautiful version of Europa, and that song was one of the first like tracks I learned, and then I got obsessed with just trying to learn all of his songs, and then B.B. King and Eric Clapton. So it was kind of, for me, it was just like another voice and something really magical about the guitar, really. And you never stop learning. For me, I never want to, you know, stop getting sort of better at it or try different things or changing my style up a little bit and all of that, because you know, that's what it's all about, keeping interesting for myself and other people, you know.
Did you ever take lessons, or did you just kind of figure it out on your own as you went?
Both. Yeah, I took a few lessons. I had one great teacher. The rest were not that great. They were horrible. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to lock myself away and, you know, practice for 6 or 7 hours with records, you know. And back then it was like VHS, you know, the wearing out, you know, videos and, you know, cassettes, right, and all that kind of stuff, and then vinyl records, and then having to go back, and, you know, it was quite tedious. These days, kids have got YouTube, you know, how to play, which is awesome, you know. They get the shortcut. But back then, it was more like just listening, you know, learning by ear, and, yeah, it was very organic, you know. Kind of simpler times, you know, but also a lot more time was spent, you know, sort of honing in on craft. So,
You mentioned Santana a couple times, and was Santana an early concert for you? Was it one of your first concerts, and was it in Australia?
It was one of the first concerts my dad took me to. So it was Tommy Emmanuel, and then it was Santana, Dance the Rainbow Serpent. So, you know, to call him like a dear friend, or he's like my dad out here, my other dad, he calls himself here in the U.S., is really crazy that, you know, to have that support and everything from him. And you know, it's an honor. You know, I just look up to him immensely as a player in person. And it's about connecting people, you know, with music and everything. So, you know, not about just playing a bunch of meaningless notes, even though I like to do that sometimes with all the flash. But, you know, you have to, it's about the melodies. It's about feeling it. It's about being in the moment. And, you know, I really learned that from his playing.
Yeah, I just watched the Santana documentary, which I thought was fantastic. I just had a chance to see it, actually. I thought it was really good. And the other day, Neil Sean turned 70 years old, and he started out playing in Santana. And I was thinking about it, and I'm like, how the hell is Neil only 70 when he was in Santana in, like, 1970? And then I realized Neil was, yeah, like, 15 when he was in Santana. So, you know, yeah. Carlos seems to have this side of him where he whether he directly influences or actually, you know, brings people into his band or finds talent very early on. When did you first meet him? How did you meet him at that first concert?
No, I actually met him later on. I was like 14, and then I got to eat. And I was 14 years old. I sent him a demo to his management office, and then his brother emailed me back and said, we've been playing it in the office. Carlos loves it. You got to come over to the U.S. And then I guess I met him when I was like, maybe 16, 17, when he came over to Adelaide to perform, and then I got to meet him backstage. We started jamming, and he's like, come on stage with me. And it was like 15,000 people, Memorial Drive in Adelaide, and I didn't know what he was going to play. He didn't tell me what songs. He's like, just follow me on stage. And, you know, I was really nervous. But, you know, he just turned to me, and I set up on stage and for about like 45 minutes to, I guess, 50 minutes just playing all the tracks with him, because I learned literally all of his songs. So it was kind of easy. But after that, you know, it's like just kind of throwing you in the deep end of the ocean to see if you can swim, you know, the musician, like, can you cut it? And that's the best way, you know. Playing in cover bands since I was 14, you know, I just quit school and would go out and jam with different musicians all the time. So, you know, you really learn from just putting yourself out there and you know, especially having the opportunity with Carlos. And then he took that video to Paul Reed Smith, the guitar company. Then they invited me over to play the NAMM show. So I would be always at NAMM demonstrating in the booth. And then I made a record again, and another one when I was like, I guess, 17, 18. And then I got a deal with Jimmy Iovine with Interscope. And then I moved over here. But yeah, it was crazy times and all of that. But I'm very, very grateful to have the support of such, you know, such legends, and, you know, with Carlos and Steve Vai and people like that and Robbie Krieger and much people. So, and especially Paul Reed Smith guitars, you know, I've been playing them since I was 11, and I just love them. They're very comfortable and amazing to have, like, they've come out with four different signature models with them so far. And that's a real honor. It's actually kind of crazy. I don't believe it. You know, I'm still a kid. So,
yeah, that's a prestigious thing. I don't play guitar, but I just know people that do, and I know that that's something that doesn't come lightly. That to have that sort of endorsement and have signature models with them is a pretty big deal in the guitar community, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I never take anything for granted. You know, it's like, it's insane. Like when you get the guitar and you hold it in your hands, and it's got your, you know, everything you know want on the guitar. And put your logo on, it's like, holy crap, is this real? Like, you know, I truly am like a 15-year-old. I don't think I'm ever going to grow up completely when it comes to stuff like that. And just gratitude, you know, for everything. And, you know, you work really hard, but then to have the support and the people that, you know, dig what you do and surround you, that's, you know, you got to be wake up and have that gratitude. And coming out with a signature amp now with Orange, we just spent a year on this amplifier, and that's going to come out. And I'm very, very excited about that because it's my dream amplifier, and getting it made out of, you know, London. And it's going to be put out, I guess, in the next few months And it's really wonderful, honestly. I'm really proud of it.
Orianthi, was the first major artist that you actually collaborated with and like performed with, was it Carrie Underwood? Was that the first one?
Well, Steve Vai first, and then Steve Vai, and then it was Carrie Underwood, the Grammy Awards, because my management team at the time was Simon Fuller. I was the first artist to be signed to a management team that only took care of American Idol, basically, and I was the first non-Idol, and her manager was next door to mine, and she was just talking about the Grammy Awards, and then I guess she mentioned needed a guitar player. And she's like, why don't you come and perform with me? I'm like, oh, my God, that'd be amazing. And being such a big fan of hers, I mean, what an incredible singer and a wonderful person. I was honored, and I was very nervous because you get out there, it's the first performance ever. You're playing the Grammys and walking by, Bono, The Edge, and then Paul McCartney's there, and Keith Urban's introducing you and all this stuff. I was like, B.B. King, I got to meet, actually, in the green room prior to that performance, and he was eating all these crawfish and stuff. It was really and lobster. It was really funny. And I sat there with him and he was so sweet. And I was like, wow, it was very surreal. That whole moment, And then after that, that's when Michael Jackson saw me, I guess. And then called for me to be part of his tour that never happened, but I got to work with him for 4 or 5 months. So that was an honor.
What was, you've probably been asked this a million times, but what was that experience like working with Michael Jackson? Because, sometimes I'll talk to artists who are in the supporting band for a mega star like that. And they'll say things to me I never really met him and we just would go on and I'd know what I had to do and I'd stay out of the way. Was it like that with him, or were you pretty much was he collaborative and communicating with you a lot? Were you guys, did you work directly a lot, or was it just, okay, you're on stage, do your part?
No, he would be very personable with everybody. So he spent a lot of time with me and what he wanted me to do and the guitar sounds and everything, which I was kind of surprised about, to be honest, because, he was very much that way with all the dancers and visually the way he wanted to be, and everyone as an individual, he spent time with us. And that was, it was really hard because we lost a friend, it was somebody that obviously, one of the biggest pop stars in the world, but he was a great guy. He really was. He was obsessed with music, perfection, making things come across the right way, wanting people when they, if the shows would have happened, for it to be incredible on all, just for it to sound like the record, but have our personalities with it, and really showcase each person. And he was very, very different to what I thought he would be, to be honest. And I can't say enough great things about him. He worked his ass off, and he worked too much, to be honest. That's what I saw. So
very driven, too. I don't know if you saw it. I just watched the documentary on the making of Thriller, and he was so driven. Even though he was massively successful going in to make Thriller, he was still on this drive that he needed to make the biggest record of all time. It wasn't good enough for him to just make a record that was going to sell a few million copies. He needed to make this defining pop record, which, of course, he ended up doing. But just the drive that he still had, even at that point, was just amazing to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when we were doing the rehearsals, he was the same way. He wanted it to be the greatest show ever, and he put a lot of pressure on himself. He was nervous how people were going to, kind of see it. And he wanted it to be just incredible. So all the critics and all that kind of stuff, people were just wow, this is amazing. And I think the pressure that he put on himself was just too much, honestly, in the end, and with everything. The show was crazy. We booked out the Forum and the Staples Center, and we would rehearse in the Staples Center and the Forum. That was our rehearsal space. So, it was pretty wild in that aspect. But it's a very surreal time. I'm very grateful for these experiences. It was very sad in the end and how things happened and what happened to him. But I always remember the good times that we had, as a band and everyone working together as a production.
Yeah, and he seemed to have a real appreciation, even though he was a pop artist, R&B, pop, whatever you want to call it, he seemed to have a real appreciation for guitar and guitar heroes, because if you look at the history, I mean, obviously Steve Lukather played all those great guitars on Thriller, Eddie Van Halen on the one solo, and then you go forward and you know, there's Slash, there's Steve Stevens, there's yourself. So he seemed to really have an appreciation and wanted that element in his music and his band, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he was so caught up on tones as well, which is very interesting. I changed my amp out like 3 times. He's like, you got to get a better tone there. Like, I want it to sound like this, or, you know, you got to do this. And I was like, wow, like, okay, cool. And took his lead and changed out my amps and different guitars and whatnot until he was happy, I was happy, and, you know, everyone was. But, you know, he didn't just go, oh, that will do. You know what I mean? Like, some people are like, oh, that will do. We'll get by. No, he was like, no, it has to sound just like this, what I'm hearing in my head. So, you know, we spent a lot of time on everything. And you know, he definitely just loved the power of guitars and how, you know, the moments as well in the songs and how, you know, it's sort of, it's interesting, really interesting blend. And from the funk rhythm parts I had to learn to the, you know, leads and everything. It's funny, a lot of the parts I had to learn was more rhythm. You know, I became a better rhythm player than, you know, a lot of people think, oh, yeah, this is all like crazy leads and flashy stuff. But no, it's very much about like keeping in the groove. You know, each part was very specific. So I definitely had to step up as a rhythm player for that gig.
One last thing on Michael Jackson, and I'll move on and we'll talk about your current single. But I'm curious, you know, and I think when last we spoke on the radio, I brought this up to you too, and it always amazed me, you know, when he tragically passed away, and the news was basically in a 24/7 loop, it seemed like, about his passing, and every single time every news outlet in the world used a clip of him coming over to you in rehearsal. And you were in, yeah. I don't know if it's just the clip that they serviced or the clip everybody had cleared or what it was, but that had to be surreal for you, because suddenly the world was saying, the people that didn't know you, the world was saying, who is this blonde girl that Michael Jackson is jamming with on stage? Like every single news outlet was running that clip nonstop.
It was wild. At first, you know, I was pretty numb. I think everyone that was involved was just numb, like shocked and like, what the hell? And then, you know, we saw, you know, the news and then I had so many people that would show up at my door and follow me down the street and try to get information from me, you know, that was scary. My sister was here with me and we would, you know, be walking down like, you know, like West 3rd Street. I was living, you know, West Hollywood at the time. And I couldn't go anywhere for quite some time, about a year or so, without like people filming me. The worst was when I was talking to some friends and we were just walking down the street and people were actually filming the TMZ or somebody, I don't know what TMZ or whatever it was. So they were filming us talking and trying to get stuff from me. And that was creepy. And then restaurants as well, like next to me, like trying to get information about, you know, Michael. And I was just pretty, you know, kind of disturbed, I guess, for a while. Took me a minute, but to feel comfortable with people around me and everything. And then when he passed, the label decided to put out my record straight away. So I was put on this crazy press trip that probably wasn't good for my mental health, to be honest, to be, you know, trying to process something that happened and then to be thrown out. Oh, yeah, this is my hit single, everybody. Like, you know, it was very, it didn't feel right at the time, to be honest. I didn't enjoy it by any means. That was probably a pretty weird time in my life, to be honest. And you know, having that record already done prior to, you know, working with Michael and we're going to release it. And when he asked me to join him, I kind of put that aside, you know, and then he passed and then Interscope were like, let's put out your first single. We were going to do that before. And I was like, okay. And you know, it was very weird for me. That's all I can say. I'm happy that people took to that single and it did very well, but at the same time, I have mixed feelings over that whole sure. time in my life, to be honest. Yeah,
no, I could certainly understand that without a doubt. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention our mutual friend, the legendary Alice Cooper, which you spent some time with him. And you know, this past December, I had a party at the House of Blues for my 40th year in radio, and so many artists came out, yourself included, and Alice contacted me like 2 weeks before the party and told me he was going to come and wanted to get up and do a few songs, which blew my mind. And then we were in this scramble to kind of figure out, okay, who's Alice going to play with? Because we had a set backing band, but I wanted to make sure he was comfortable with whatever musicians he wanted on stage, because he was doing me a favor to come and play for me. And as soon as we found out you were coming and mentioned you were there, his camp was immediately like, oh, Ori would be great. So it was, first of all, thank you for performing at my event and being up there with Alice. Oh. But it was so cool to see you reunited with him and on stage playing with him again. I imagine that had to be fun for you as well.
Oh, you know what? Alice and his wife and his band, everything, will always be family. And when you spend like 4 years on a bus living with them, you know, they become family. And anytime he calls me to do something, I'm there. I'm actually doing his foundation, the Alice Cooper, the golf course, I'm pretty sure. I've got to get the information in a second. But we're playing, the Cooper Foundation charity event, I think next month, which I'm doing with him. And you know, anytime that he calls me, the Solid Rock, that's right, it just went from my mind, Solid Rock Foundation. And anytime he asks me to do something, I'm there. He's a legend. He's one of the nicest people you ever meet. And, you know, being on the road with him for 4 years, he's in the same mood every day and gives 110% on stage every night. And what a great performer. I mean, you know, working with Michael, and then working straight after, well, not straight after, but then working with Alice. And then, you know, he's such a showman and such a great, you know, musician too, and singer and everything. And I learned a lot, you know, aside from trying not to get stabbed by real knives and bitten by pythons and squashed by a Frankenstein. You know, it definitely was celebrating Halloween every night and having, you know, that incredible experience with such wonderful people. It was truly something, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, it was surreal for me. That whole night was surreal for me, all those artists that came out and played. And Alice, you know, I had talked to Alice like a couple months before, and I told him about the event, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'll be there, very off the cuff on the air. And I was like, I'm not going to hold him to it. You know, I know he's a super nice guy and all, but about a week and a half, 2 weeks before, you know, his team calls me. I was like, yeah, so Alice wants to do this. And I was like, he's really going to do it. And I was like, yeah, I go, okay, well, what is he going to play and who's he going to play with? And we'll make it as comfortable as he wants it to be. And I know he stuck around town for a couple of days. He went to the opening of a casino, and he had actually asked me to appear. He wanted me to do his Christmas pudding, which was 2 days earlier from my party. And unfortunately, I couldn't, because I had so many friends and family in town for my event. I was like, I can't leave Vegas and go to Arizona and leave everybody sitting there, my family and everything. So I told Alice, I'm like, next year I'm in 100%, no problem. I said, just can't do it this year. He's like, okay, well, I'll come to your thing. So it was just so cool. It was a really special night, obviously, for a lot myself, but a lot of people as well. We had all had a great time.
Oh, we had a really wonderful time, you know, celebrating yourself, and it was a really great, like, just vibe all the way around. It really was.
Yeah.
Great to be a part of it, truly. So, yeah.
Everybody said that. That was the thing that everybody came away with, was the vibe. And I've got the whole thing shot and recorded. I'm just trying to figure out what I can do with it and the clearances and all of that. But hopefully I can get it out there, because it's something, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, but I've got it really recorded, and I'd love to hopefully get it out there. Oh, great. If I could work around all the obstacles. So we'll see.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. Yeah, it was so fun.
And I would give all the money to charity, just like I did for the event itself. So we'll see if I can put that together. All right, so let me ask you about this recording you did with Joe Bonamassa. And I got to tell you, and I'm not just saying this, when I think you sent me the song and the video, and the song is called First Time Blues, and it may be... And I've loved a lot of what you've done, but I really love this direction for you. I really love the song. I love the riff. I know Joe. He's a friend. He's a super gracious guy to other musicians. Tell me about this track coming together.
Hey, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you. You know, I wrote that song quite some time ago, and I really wanted to re-record it. And I recorded it ages ago at the studio, and it wasn't right. And I've been playing it live with my band, and so Robbie Krieger, you know, he has a great studio out here in LA, which I'm very comfortable using. And And I went in with my band. I cut a couple of tracks. And then I was talking to Joe. We were just chatting on the phone. I was like, hey, I'm going to be in the studio. And he had recorded some stuff with me, you know, before, but we never put it out. And I said, hey, do you want to come put a solo down? He's like, absolutely, I'll be there. And just get me a Diet Coke and some cigars. And I'm like, okay. So he was there, and he's such a badass player and great friend of mine for years. And Robbie Krieger was there too, and my band. And we just had a really good time. You know, it was very easy. We did like two or three takes of the song. I sang it, you know, kind of live in the control room. I didn't even go into a vocal booth. And we just put down our guitars fast. It took Joe like a take, you know, a take or two. And he's like, he was done. And same with all the musicians. It was just came together really well. And I had a vision for it coming in and, you know, producing another, you know, I produced my first couple of records and I really wanted to get back into doing that again. And so being able to, you know, self-produce and then have incredible musicians and then have Kevin Shirley, he's such an amazing producer and I want to work with him later, but to produce some things for me, but he's an incredible mixer and he mixed the song. So just so grateful for that and so grateful that Joe part of it. And you know, he was very gracious and he played his ass off on it, you know, so I'm really, really proud of that track for sure.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was funny because just a few weeks ago I was with Joe and Kevin and everybody at Third Encore in LA because they were rehearsing Black Country Communion, and I was about to fly out of town and they grabbed me and they said, will you come down and shoot some stuff, because they wanted an interview that they could record and film for this coming record they're doing with BCC. And I said, of course. So they were great to me. And I went down there and I did it. I spent the day with them. And then just as I was leaving, I was talking to Kevin. It was shortly after that, that you sent me the track. And I was like, this is crazy. Cause I'm literally leaving Kevin and Joe and they're both part of this track you sent. And then when I heard it, I just, you hit the nail on the head. It's just like, it's very live, it's very organic feeling. The song itself is great. It's not just a platform for soloing. And again, when I I've loved a lot of what you've done, but I'm like, I really felt like when I heard it, I'm like, wow, I really think you kind of found your sweet spot here. Do you want to do more of this? Is there a full record coming, or what's the plan? Yeah. Or is it just a single for now?
Well, I'm just putting out singles one by one. By the end of the year, there'll be a full record. So, you know, it's definitely new direction, and I'm writing all the songs myself, and I'm self-producing and just doing it differently. You know, I'm not having too many cooks in the kitchen and having, you know, before it's like, you know, you have some big producers come in, or, you know, A&R or signing to a major label, and I've done that so many times. And now it's just like, hey, I just want to be honest. I want to do something that just feels right to me, that resonates with me, and I feel like excitement over it, because you know, music these days, this industry, it's crazy, you know, and to find happiness and to find some peace is everything, you know, and when you find that and you're able to just create without too much noise, without too many opinions, without people saying, oh, this is what people want to hear. They want to hear another pop song from you. I'm like, no, they don't. It's like, can I just do this? And having the freedom right now to do what I want to do, I feel very happy about that. I truly do. And it was just kind of just happened really fast. You know, and I'm just going to continue to do that, put out songs. The next track is I'm recording on Friday, and it's going to be a little different, but sort of in a similar vein. And then, you know, we've got, and that'll be three tracks that we've recorded, and we're going to do more. And then I'm doing a side project, which I'm very excited about, which I'll talk to you about later. But like, you know, there's quite a few things happening and back and forth, you know, to Vegas. And I just feel like, you know, life, and especially in this business, is an adventure, and you got to wake up excited about things, because excitement makes things happen, you know, and not listening to too many people, you know, listening to a few people for opinions and perspective, but when you listen to yourself and what resonates and what's in your heart, that's kind of, as cliche as that sounds, it's truly, you know, where the path is, you know. It's not outfits people want to put on you, or, you know, their opinion of what you should be doing, you know. It's kind of like, what do you want to do, you know, as an artist? And that's kind of what I ask myself before I'm like, what do I want to do? And this is the direction now. This is kind of just very organic, you know, free of too many opinions and people. And then people have, you know, I've got some really nice comments about the song, and I'm really, I'm really happy about that. You know, it means a lot. It really does.
Well, it's really, really good. And I look forward to the rest of the material as it comes out. And you're in Vegas a lot. I'm there part time. So I do shows live from my place there, too. So maybe we can have you come sit in one of these days when it works out for our schedules and just hang out and talk to callers and all that. That would be fun. I wanted to ask you, though, you mentioned a side project. Now, I just saw you play at a Super Bowl post party, which you were nice enough to get me into with a trio. Is that what you're referencing? Can we talk about that or no?
Yeah, that's a project for sure. Yeah, I'm not going to talk too much about it because we're getting in the studio really soon. Very excited. We have some amazing people, a part of this and everything, and a great producer who's going to be working with us. And it's very early stages now. We're just playing covers right now, because we just got together, but they're very dear friends of mine. And I just sort of feel like, having, Rhonda Smith and Cindy Blackman Santana, I mean, you can't get better than that. Musicians are just incredible. And we just had, we got together and there's just energy there. There's something there. And we're all writers too. So we're going to get in the studio and start, chipping away at a record.
So it'll be original material. The night I saw you were playing all like 60s, 70s covers, but what you're going to do with this project would be original stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. All original. Yep. And we're just honing in on sounds right now and putting it all together. So it's really exciting because it's the beginning of something, and that's always where the excitement is, right? So, there'll be more to come and we putting out I'm sure a full record. Things take time, so I'm not going to put a time frame on it. It could happen really fast. It could happen, whenever we feel it's right, So that's where we're going on right now. But we're getting together very soon. We're actually playing an event in Vegas for Women's Health on the 7th of March. We'll be there, and it's for the McGee's Institute, and all the money raised. We're playing at the Hard Rock. I believe it's 8 p.m. on the 7th of March, and we'll be playing for about 40 minutes together. So that would be great.
The Hard Rock right on the Strip.
Yes, in Vegas, yeah.
Because just for people that don't know Vegas that well, there was a Hard Rock Casino that's not there anymore, but there is an actual Hard Rock Cafe right on the Strip, which actually is a great venue upstairs. I've done some stuff up there. So if you're in Vegas and want to go to that on March 7th, that is... that's where that's going down, just so that there's no confusion. Is there a name for that band yet, or you don't have one or don't want to reveal it yet?
We have some. We had one that we really liked, but we're not going to, I think, right now the music, we're going to put that together first and then decide on the name. I think that's, got to put the music first and see how it all feels, and everything's going to be pretty cohesive with it all. But we definitely have different band names that we have and all of that. But at this point, we're just going to get together and, we got great energy together. That's all I know. And I'm excited. I really am about the future of this.
Well, I'm glad that I had a chance to see you guys just kind of start now playing those covers, which was just killer. So I think direction wise, what you're doing is awesome between the solo stuff and this track out now, which is First Time Blues, and having gotten a little taste of that, of what's coming, I think it's going to be great. And the last thing, and I know you don't want to give too much away, and I won't say it on the air if you don't want me to, because I don't know if it's happening, but in the room that night was an old friend of mine who is a legendary producer who told me he was there checking you guys out. Have you made a decision on who's going to produce this yet, or are you still going through that process?
I'm pretty sure the guy you're talking about is the one that's producing it. Yes. Without saying names. But yes, he is a legend. He's a friend. He has done incredible stuff, and all will be revealed soon.
All right. Well, I won't spoil it for you, but I know I've known him for about 40 years, and I was surprised to run into him. We talked for a little bit. I said, "What are you doing here?" And he just pointed to you. And I said, because he was wearing a mask, and I said, okay, you're being incognito. I get it. And he's like, "No, I'm pointing to the," I said, oh, okay. That's it. I'm somebody tells me not to say anything, Orianthi. I won't say anything. I'll leave it at that. But I think that's going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to be so fun. And what a legend,
yeah.
A producer, and having tons of conversations with him too. And, you know, I think this whole thing, you know, as I said, it's beginnings. It's exciting. And I can't wait to share more with you. Hopefully soon.
The biggest obstacle working with that guy, and again, we'll, until you're ready to announce it, I won't say, but the biggest obstacle working with that guy for most artists is actually working on your own music and not just asking him a million questions about the bands he used to work with because you just want the stories.
Hey, you know, he's full of stories and I'm all ears because I got to tell you, like, what a fan I am of all the records he's made. And,
right.
But you know, first and foremost, I mean, he is just, he's a tone guy. He is a, just, you know, sonically, you know, making, being the fourth member of this band. Really, he's coming in like that, and I trust him. And you know, I think that when we get together, we'll create something really special and unique. That's what I really want to do, is something that's different from what I do by myself. You know, because we got, you know, three different personalities here with Rhonda and Cindy and myself. And when we come together, it's going to be something different. And I can't wait for what's to come. Truly, so.
Well, we'll do more on that when the time is right. For now, everybody check out Orianthe's latest single, guest appearance from Joe Bonamassa. It truly is killer. It's called First Time Blues. There's a video out for it as well. And the single's out there now as well. It came out just about a week or so ago. So you can listen to that wherever you check out your music and keep up with everything Orianthe has going on. Her website is orianthe.me. So that is the place to go for all the information and coming shows and all that good stuff. Hey, great talking to you. I'm glad we had a chance to catch up on the air at least. And hopefully, when I'm back in Vegas, if you're there at the same time, it'd be great to catch up some more. And all the best to you. Thanks for the time.
Hey, thank you so much, Eddie. I really appreciate you big time. Thank you very much. And talk to you really soon.
All right. Thanks. Have a good day.
You too. Shut up. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks to Ori for giving us some time. It's always great to see her. Had a chance to see her in Vegas recently, where she is quite a bit. As we talked about, saw her jam at a post-Super Bowl party recently. And that new music she put out sounds fantastic. Hoping for a new record from her with that. And, of course, a new band coming as well that she referenced that I'm excited about. And I'll just give you a little exclusive for the podcast audience. That legendary producer may have the initials DK. I'll leave it at that. Let her break that news. All right. Well, we thank Orianthe. Thanks to Frank Cannon. Again, hit me on social media. Keep up with everything going on. Check out Trunk Nation every day on Sirius XM Faction Talk 103 at 3 Eastern Live or anytime on the app. Don't forget Mondays. You got the Hair Nation show as well, 5 to 8 Eastern. And I've got an FM syndicated show out there for you. So 8 broadcasts a week. Thank you for checking out what you can check out. Have yourselves a great week. Catch you next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Exco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.